roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
What is going on, Junkie Nation? It is Thursday, February 18th. I used to say February. I used to eliminate the first R. February 18th of 2021, and it's going to be a fun show today. We are going to talk a little bit of mixed martial arts, but definitely want to send out thoughts and prayers to everybody that's affected by this horrific storm all over the United States. Kind of had a chat with my cousin Lewis, who some of you know, who's in Dallas, Texas. Luckily, they're okay. We have his younger sister who's in Austin. She was without power and water for 3 days. Wow, man, it was, you know, I knew it was pretty bad, but when I really started focusing on the news and seeing how horrific the situation was, I felt terrible that I hadn't reached out a couple days earlier, but they're okay, luckily. But anybody affected by it, man. And, you know, our friend Sam All Jam goes, you know, he's kind of been giving us updates. Matt Erickson as well from the Junkie staff showing us pics of the snow out where they're at. And I think we're almost treating it like, wow, that's crazy. You're going to have a snowball fight. You know, you're breaking out the snowmobiles. And of course they're saying I'm shoveling. And we're saying, well, you want the Four Seasons, but this thing's pretty bad. Like, I mean, there was some pictures where I saw where it almost seemed like you could only barely see the roofs of homes because it was all covered in snow. That's horrific.
Yeah. And I didn't really grow up with snow. So the first thing that I think of is that shit's got to melt, right? And what happens when it melts? Like, does it flood your house? I don't know how all this works, but I did see on the news last night somebody whose house just the roof started caving in, but it was so cold in their house that the ceiling fan had icicles.
Yeah, I did see that. I think it was that image that had me going to the phone and reaching out to Lewis. I didn't call him because it was 10 our time. Midnight his time. So I thought, let me take the chance here that, you know, maybe a text is a little bit less, you know, less jarring than a actual ring from a phone. But so on today's show, we're going to talk a little bit of mixed martial arts here. And, you know, we got a show coming up, two shows coming up this weekend, the historic LFA 100 show. And then we also have UFC Fight Night 185 with Blades versus Lewis. So we'll dive into both of those shows. In fact, last I know, Ed Soares is going to join us on today's show, guys.
Yes, sir.
Okay, he's going to pop in. He is the president of LFA, and he's also a manager in the sport is how we met him. Actually, you know how we met him? We met him as a sponsor for a clothing line. And I think that kind of basically turned him into a manager and a prominent manager. I think at one time he was probably the biggest manager when he had Anderson Silva and the Nogueira brothers. Now we know him primarily as the promoter, president of LFA. LFA has their 100 show coming up. We'll talk a little bit about that. We'll talk a little bit about the UFC, and we'll cover the latest news. We'll be right back to start the show. All right. I made coffee, and I forgot to bring it over here. I'm an idiot, but no. I didn't have time to get the creamer and stir it, so water will do for now. Sounds like you want to say something?
I was going to ask you something. Our Junkie Radio show throughout the years has evolved into so many different things, and there are some things that we used to do that we do now on our Patreon show. If you follow us on Patreon, we do our stun gun segment. We've even added a touch of glove segment, which is the reverse stun gun. But one thing I want to get back to is having a little bit more input from the fans. And one question that I got in this morning that I just kind of giggled at was right before the show was starting. I thought since Ed's going to be coming on in a couple minutes, it's not like we can really dive into what's going on right now. So one thing I did want to bring up was we will get to Ed Soares here in a second. Galley from Toronto, one of our listeners, he came up with what I thought was a brilliant idea. And what he said was this. You know how Miley Cyrus wants him to shave MC into his chest, George?
You mean Julian Marquez?
Julian Marquez. What did I say?
Well, I don't know. You started with Galley from Toronto with a suggestion, but I wanted to fill in the blank. Yeah.
He was saying, what if he just off-centers it a little bit or stacks it? But if things don't go right, if he just does the tattoo to kind of one-up it, but if things don't go right, all he's got to do is put a C in front of the M, and now he's Cuban Missile Crisis. That's pretty smart, right?
Yes. So he should have the C right in the middle of the chest and the M on the, I guess it would be the left side, right? MC for Miley Cyrus. Mm-hmm. And then he could use the right pictorial if things don't go right to fill in the C. Well, wait, it's just hair. It's just he's shaving hair. He challenged her with something to do with a henna or tattoo or something like that, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But I got a better idea. How about he just call her and go out at this point? Enough with the tattoos and the shaving hair. You know what I mean? Like, go out with her. World famous singer or whatever.
Yeah. Famous dad, too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. All right. All right. He's ready to go. I think. Oh, there he is. Yeah, his name is Ed Soares. And of course, going back to even the time he was in our studio, we know a lot about this guy, Fight Club promoter, club promoter, and then he was also in apparel. He had an apparel company, a manager, and now promoting fights, LFA 100. That's his baby. It all goes down this weekend, to be more exact, obviously, tomorrow, February 19th, in Hartman Arena, Park City, Kansas. Here he is, Ed Soares. What's going on, Ed? How are you?
What's up, guys? How are you? It's been a long time. Good to see you guys.
Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah, I love your sweater. There's like a cardigan. Do they call those a cardigan sweater or something?
No, it's not a cardigan. It's just a hooded sweater. Actually, it's an old one. Okay, it's an old Sinister one that I found in my closet that was like brand new from years ago. I just broke it out.
You got a double X? I'll buy that shit. That's nice.
Thanks. I don't. I only had one. It was an XL.
It's really cool. I like it, man. Yeah, I mean, now that you put the hoodie, I could tell, but it's even got because of the white look to it. It even looks like you're in a comfy robe,
like an old pinstripe, Yankee uniform. You know? It is,
man. Yeah. So how you doing, Ed? Big weekend coming up here,
man. I'm doing great. Yeah, I'm super excited. You know, obviously LFA 100. It's been a journey. We've had to overcome so many adversities, and I'm just happy to be here. You know, LFA is doing great, and just excited that we got here so quickly. Actually, you know, just a little over 4 years.
UFC Fight Pass, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. LFA 100. Talking with Ed Soares here. And so, Ed, what's going through your head as you recant the last 100? And what are you thinking about from 101 to 200, and you know, what you would like to start the process of carrying over?
Well, I would say just thinking about the first 100 shows, like I said, all the different adversities we've had to overcome, from losing our TV deal with Access to, you know, so many different things. And then the pandemic hit, and then, you know, we're so grateful to be with UFC Fight Pass and what that's done for our brand. And, you know, in 2021, this year, we're looking to take a step and expand internationally. So we're looking to do 2 to 4 shows this year in Brazil. So that's what we're really excited about. Obviously, this, you know, tomorrow night having LFA 100, and by the end of this year for us to be able to pull off an international show.
I love it. Yes, international is huge. And for a lot of people that don't know, Ed is, you were born in Brazil, but at a young age came to the United States, correct?
No. I was born and raised in California. Yeah.
Okay.
But both of my parents are Brazilian.
Perfect Portuguese. I mean, flawless Portuguese. And he is the man to take a promotion to Brazil. You know, because you've worked with a lot of top name Brazilian fighters. We said that in the past. back in the day, we started with the OG names like the Nogueras, obviously. Anderson Silva, can't leave him out. Cavalcante, Fajal, I loved him.
That's right.
So I guess it's now time to maybe look for that new crop.
Yeah, no, I mean, going down to Brazil, there's so much talent down there. And unfortunately, you know, there's just not a lot of opportunity out there for the Brazilian fighters. So we're really excited to go down there and be able to give a platform to so many talented fighters down there. And once again, expanding our footprint internationally. We have a great a deal with Combate in Brazil. So we're broadcasted live on Combate, which is the network that the UFC is on in Brazil. So since that's happened, it's been extremely you know, it's helped our brand grow a lot in Brazil. So we're really excited about, you know, taking that first step into taking our show international.
I'll never forget. I'm so glad he wore a Sinister hoodie today, because when I first, I want to say it might have been my first day of college, when I walked into this auditorium, I saw a guy wearing a Sinister tank top. And I just remember thinking, like, who am I going to sit? I don't know anybody. And I saw that guy, and I was like, that's my dude. And this is years ago. So this is when, like, people didn't even really talk about MMA or nothing. And I sat down next to him, and I'm like, dude, that's such an awesome tank top. Where'd you get it from? And he goes, oh, man, I spent the night at my boy's house, and I didn't have anything, so he gave it to me. And he ended up being a dork, and I sat next to him, and I was like, ah. But I just remember seeing that.
He was a dork with good friends.
Yeah, there you go. But whenever I would see that clothing brand on people at school, I would gravitate towards them. And I just remember that was one of the first ones I would see at school, and I loved it. But, you know, you've done so many things. We just mentioned the clothing brand, promoting, managing. You've done so many things in our sport. At the end of the day, what represents you? Like, what is it that you want to be remembered for? What are you most proud of?
You know, when I think about that, I kind of think about why I got into the sport, and that's really to make a difference. You know, when I got into this sport, it wasn't for the money. It wasn't for anything, because back then there was no money in it. You know, and I just enjoyed helping fighters and helping guys get to where they want to go and being able to help guide them. It was extremely fulfilling. And you know, I literally getting into the sport, yes, I got in through sponsoring fighters because of Sinister and all that. And then I started producing the TV show, Passing the Guard, that I brought from my business partner in the management company. We brought that over from Brazil here. And that's kind of what started that whole thing, because at that point in time, I knew that we were, you know, we were the only show promoting mixed martial arts on free television. And we were, you know, giving a lot of exposure to the events, and we were also building a great relationships with fighters. So it was really great to help fighters make that transition to help them get to where they want to go. And I think that's really what I want to be remembered for, a guy that made a difference and helped people fulfill their dreams. That fulfills me. And that's why I enjoy the phase that I'm in now with the LFA, because we see so many young talented fighters come up through our organization, and to help them, like I explain it all the time, I look at a fighter as like a wall of success. And if the LFA could be one or two or three blocks in that wall of success, that's what I'm shooting to do.
So many names have come through your organization, gone on, done great things in our sports. Is there a particular fighter and a moment that they had once they've left your organization that you were particularly proud of, where you look at that guy and go, man, that guy started with me?
There's been quite a few. You know, one of them that comes to mind is Pedro Munhoz. To see him, you know, show up at Black House and not being able to hardly get any fights, and then get him into the RFA and him win the title there, and then him go on and do what he's doing. Alexander Pantoja, Brian Ortega, all these guys that have came through our organization, and even more recently, fighters like Dominic Reyes, guys like Kevin Holland, guys like Corey Sanhagen, it's incredible to be able to help be a part of these guys' success.
Can you talk a little bit about innovation. I think every time we've spoken to you, there's always something new, something that you're working on. I see Laura Senko now. I mean, people went bananas over that, and she definitely deserves it. Yes. Expanding over internationally. How many of these ideas do you have that you can't even share right now? And then how many, are there any that you had that just could, for some reason you couldn't make work?
I mean, there's always, you know, any successful business, if they say they've never had any failures, they're either extremely lucky or they're lying. It's just, I find it hard to believe. I mean, we've had a lot of things that didn't work, but we just keep our nose to the grindstone and always finding a way to keep doing shows. Like I said, all the adversities that we've had to come over, that we've had to get over in the past 3 to 4 years, I just feel that, you know, our team is solid. I'm very blessed to have the team that I have. I mean, my partners, the Imperial family who supports us there, and our day-to-day partners that are grinding with me, Sven Bean, Mark Berry, and just the entire staff of the LFA. I say it all the time, and I feel like pound for pound, we're the best in the business. You know, granted, there's events out there that are bigger and better, like the UFC and Bellator. But, you know, they've also got, you know, UFC's got over 300 employees. Bellator's got, I don't know, 40, 50 employees. But, you know, the LFA just does it with a very skeleton crew. So that's why I always feel very confident to say pound for pound, we're the best in the business. And I'm very grateful for everyone that I work for. You know, our production team, everyone is just solid.
All right. And so give us a breakdown. We got a main event tomorrow night, Friday, February 19th. It's LFA 100, Altamirano versus Smith. This is their 100th show. It's a big one on the UFC Fight Pass. Again, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. I always gravitate straight to the records. I love it. 8-1 versus 6-1. These guys are top guys. Tell us a little bit about this main event.
Yeah, you know, this particular event, obviously being LFA 100, you know, cool story is Victor Altamirano. Okay, Victor Altamirano is a guy who's headlining, fighting for the flyweight title versus Nate Smith. And the cool story about Victor is that an LFA one, he competed as an amateur on that card. And if I'm not mistaken, him and Mike Mendoza, I think, have the most fights in the LFA. I believe he might be on his eighth or ninth fight with the LFA. I think he's only had one fight that wasn't with the LFA. But anyway, to realize that here's a kid who fought as an amateur in LFA one, and here 100 shows later, he's the main event fighting for the flyweight world title is a pretty cool story. And then of course, Nate Smith, you know, a guy who's 6-1, I believe his last loss was, his only loss was in Contenders. You know, you've got two, of the top unsigned talent in the world competing for the flyweight title. I mean, it's definitely both of these guys are extremely explosive, extremely crafty, and you know, it's going to be an exciting fight for sure.
Definitely looking forward to it. And as you were talking, I remember a couple other flyweights, a couple other alum from LFA, Casey Kenny, Brandon Royval, both in the UFC, Sabina Matzo in the UFC. I mean, there's a lot of highlights to go through in these past 100 fight cards.
We got Macy Barber. We've got, like I said, Sanhagen. We've got just so many. Ian Heinisch. Just so many, you know. And then you even look back to the older, you know, that's came through our organization, like even a little bit older than LFA, but RFA and Legacy, you know, the Holly Holmes, the Henry Cejudos, the Brian Ortegas, you know, the Usmans.
All Black Beast. Black Beast.
That's right. Derek Lewis. I mean, I almost feel bad when I don't mention someone, and I'm sorry if I don't mention you. So, I just so many have gone through, and it's just such an honor to have them be connected with us. You know what I mean? It's just really a blessing. It's really a blessing to have all this great talent have passed through our organization.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, I have to reconsider a thought that I had. I when Dana White Contender Series was here for the long run, I thought, man, this is going to impact LFA, Cage Warriors, Titan, and I'm sure it probably has, but to think about, there's still a lot of talent out there, and you just gave us a great breakdown of the main event for tomorrow, LFA 100, UFC Fight Pass, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. You got to catch it, folks. But as you were giving me that breakdown, I guess there is still enough talent for everyone to succeed. But I did want to ask you one question. Could your offseason almost be, if you wanted to, because this is a grind, dude, maybe just the 10 weeks that the UFC is doing what they're doing, and then that allows you guys to recharge, and you guys have access to the other 42 weeks of the year?
You know what? I think we pull it off. I mean, there is enough talent to go around. And like you said, you know, we're always a little bit concerned. There's always something, you know what I'm saying? Whether it be, oh, the Ultimate Fighter, or whether it be contenders, or whether it be some new organization that's coming out. There's always something. There's always something. So what we do is we just keep our nose to the grindstone, keep doing what we're doing. And that's what we're, you know, that's what we're good at. And as far as the contender show, you know, in the contender series, the first season, I believe it was the first season, I think like 60 or 68 or 70% of the competitors on contenders were from the LFA. So yeah, I mean, it kind of, sometimes we want to put some fights together and they're going, but at the end of the day, that's what we do. Our goal is to help develop these guys to get them to that next level. So once they're there, that's what we're all shooting for. So we're just as excited as they are when they get that phone call to go up, whether it be for contenders, whether it be for Ultimate Fighter, whether it be for the UFC or Bellator, we're all excited. And even PFL, you know, PFL, we've, you know, Lance Palmer was the RFA champion and now he's the champion over there. So, you know, we just support these guys to, you know, whatever we can do to help them further their career. That's what we're here for.
Yeah. You guys are the original contenders, man. You guys prepped them with a television deal that you guys had, and you guys are now on UFC Fight Pass, which is tremendous. The Octagon idea I thought was brilliant. You know, proper announced team. You guys have always had top notch. But I remember every single time, every single week, when you guys would have your main event, it was basically winner goes to the UFC. You guys were a launching pad. And for a while, RFA and LFC were like competing. We got 42, they got 41, you know, back and forth. And so you guys just became one powerhouse. But you guys were really the original contenders. I mean, Dana now says, you know, three or four of them might come along for the ride. But he started off with, I'm going to pick the best winner and they get in. But if you think about it, that's what you guys were doing.
Yeah, that's what we were doing. And coming from a management background and realizing that that's what these fighters needed. You know, these guys were fighting in a high school gymnasium with 500 people. And then they get a phone call to fight in the UFC in a couple weeks. And they're walking out in the Staples Center in front of 15,000 people with lights, cameras. It sometimes was a little bit of, you know, it was overwhelming, you know? So I felt that by developing this organization where guys can kind of see what it feels like to have cameras, lights in their, you know, lights and cameras in their face and learning how to do interviews and having media commitments is not only preparing them, as fighters inside the Octagon by the types of challenges that we put in front of them, but also preparing them on the other side of being a fighter, which is extremely important for their career also.
Last question. I want to touch on the management side of your career. Is there a kid out there that's probably the next Anderson Silva, but yet maybe it's best not to call them that, only because I think now about everyone that's ever even come close to resembling Michael Jordan, and then you just can't. And so over there in Brazil, is it almost the same thing? Like, hey, don't worry about that. Just do, you know, work hard. And let's see what the results are. But is his name as powerful as Jordan's name in our sport, in your country, in terms of like what people aspire to be?
Hey, to me, Anderson Silva is still the GOAT, man. I know people can say, oh, but he's lost all these. But you know what? Nobody did it like Anderson Silva when Anderson Silva was doing it. All due respect to all the greats out there now, the Israel Adesanyas, the just everybody out there, the John Jones. But it just seems that when Anderson Silva in that era from 2006 to 2013, he really seemed unbeatable. And it was not only just an event. It wasn't just a mixed martial arts event. It was a moment in time. It seemed like every time he fought. And yes, do I believe that there's other talents out there? Yes. Brazil is filled with them. Brazil has so many talented fighters out there. And that's why we're looking forward to, you know, bringing the LFA there and expanding on that, exposing these great talents to the world.
Man, I'm getting goosebumps as I'm hearing you talk about, you know, Anderson Silva. So I want to tag on one more, and then we'll close with proper promotion for tonight's LFA. What gave you the most goosebumps? Because I'm sure they all did, but like the comeback in Oakland, the kick to the face at Mandalay Bay, the showboating that landed True. Him that beautiful KO against either Forrest or Bonner, you know, the ballsiness of getting up against the cage against Bonner. I mean, there's an epic comebacks. There's stuff that we haven't seen. Like which one, I guess, gives you the most chills, or did I leave one out that you'd like to throw in?
You know what? There's been so many. There's been so many, not only with him, but with so many of our other athletes. But, you know, there's just been certain moments that I remember, and maybe this is just my own personal moment, but I can remember when he was fighting Rich Franklin for the first time. This is a moment that sticks in my mind. And it was the first time that I was ever managing someone that was fighting for a world title. And we were in the warm-up room, and all of a sudden, you know, 20, 30 minutes before he's about to walk out to fight, the reality of, oh my God, my guy's going to be fighting for a world title. That was the first time I ever experienced it. I started to get nervous. I just started getting, just thinking about it, it just started making me nervous. And as Anderson's sitting there warming up, Anderson kind of noticed that I was like nervous. So he's sitting there, you know, hitting mitts, pa, 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 and looking at me and kind of winking, going like, you know, like, what's up? You know, kind of just like smiling, trying to make me laugh, you know, and I'm just kind of like all stiff, like, just everything just going through my head going, God damn, I can't believe this is happening. And then all of a sudden, you know, Bert, you know, you hear Bert, we're rolling. And I'm like, oh, shit, here it comes. You know, here we go. And then I'm opening up the door for Anderson to walk by, and Anderson walks by me, stops, looks back and winks and goes, relax. I'm going to knock Skinny out real quick. Let's go. Like that. And to me, I'm thinking, oh my God, he's fighting for the world title. And he looks at me and tells me he's going to knock the guy out real quick. Like, all right, let's go. What am I worried about? You know what I mean? And I think that was a moment that was like, he was so in tuned as an athlete to everything when he was in that zone that he could tell I was nervous. And he walked by, he stopped, took a step back and looked at me and said, relax, I'm going to knock Skinny out real quick. Come on, let's go. And it was just so like, wow, like what am I worried about? You know, I felt like what a wuss I am. You know, I mean, I'm sitting here worried and I'm not even going to get punched.
Can you imagine being that cool as a cucumber to be thinking Dude. Like that, to be acting like that, to execute it? Oh, man, that's a great story.
Yeah, so it was definitely a cool moment. But like I said, I've had so many great moments with I've been blessed, you know, as a manager. I've got to experience some incredible moments with some incredible athletes, from Anderson Silva to Lyoto Machida to Nogueira to Jose Aldo to Junior Dos Santos. There's just been so many that I've worked with through my career as a manager, and it's just been an honor to be able to be by their side and so many great, you know, heroes in our sport.
You are very fortunate. We'd love to have a part two when the pandemic opens up, get you back in studio so we can tell more stories there at the Mandalay Bay. But for now, we'll focus on LFA tomorrow night on the UFC Fight Pass, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. LFA 100, congratulations to you and the team. It's the same names that have been doing it for the past 5 years, man. You guys are a real tight core. So that's why I know why you guys have been hanging around and doing such an awesome job. You do really have pound for pound the best team. Thanks for the time today, Ed.
Hey, thank you guys as always. And thanks for the support from you guys. And I really appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
There you have it, folks. Ed Soares. What a way to close, huh, with that story about Anderson Silva.
It's so funny. I actually talked to Bert like 5 minutes before we even started this interview. And we've had fighters talk about, like, when it comes to Bert Watson, when you hear his voice, you either know it's go time, or we've had fighters say, that's when my heart sinks.
Go out the exit door time for me. I'd be like, hey man, tell him I threw up or something. And not even that, tell him I passed out. I ain't fighting. But I thought for sure he was going to say Oakland, because like literally was like every round the same, you know, and you're just going, well, this is it. Cause everybody seems to have their number. It's up at some point. And to pull that fucking submission off, I think I would have fainted. I don't know. But, you know, they're all really, really great stories. You know, I mean, think about it. When he's up against the fence, I'm sure a lot of people are like, what are you doing? Like, don't give him an easy shot. You know, like, make him earn it. You know what I mean? So, like, just go through all that stuff of what he did. And for anyone that was along for the ride, and that's just one dude. He had, like, 20 that won world titles and did these types of things. Nogueira, remember how Anderson was in the back crying when Nogueira knocked out, I believe it was Brendan Schaub? I mean, think about all those moments. And I think that was, like, the first card in Brazil, so it made it really, really special. So that's why I said we got to have a part two, because it could really just be a two-hour show on just his experiences. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. No, I was really jiving with some of the things he was saying, because what he was talking about, that whole how Anderson kind of looked at him and told him, relax. Like, there is something to when they say your friends are fighting or your teammates fighting and you're more nervous. I remember Trigg, when he was our first co-host, and when he would fight, he would do things like that where we would say, hey, man, you know, are you thinking about this? Are you doing that? And you just kind of go, relax. And you'd want to go, shut up. Me, relax. You know, are you crazy? But that's how fighters, how different they are, how differently wired. And it's so weird. I mentioned Bert. You know, we had Ed on. I ran into Mark at Sam's Club. Like, without these people, we don't have a career. You know, a lot of people in this industry. And I had this conversation with Cub Swanson over the weekend. And we were talking about how he's part of this next generation. But now he's building the foundation for guys like Juan Archuleta that he trains with. You know, he was talking about how Joe Stevenson helped him out.
Passing the torch.
Point, I'm telling you, people that are involved in this business, you have to turn around and look at the people that built things for you. Shake their hands. Tell them that you appreciate them, what they've done for you in this industry. Because, I mean, let's be honest, George, there are some people in our sport that cover our sport that can just create a YouTube channel, become popular, come and do stuff. But I don't know that the sport means as much to them as it does to us, because we had to go through a lot of things, a lot of negativity in life where people said, what are you doing covering the sport? This isn't even a sport. It was even worse for promoters. It was even worse for fighters. So you have to go back. You have to show your respect to these people. And these guys are on their 100th show, man. That's so cool. Just the names he was laying out one after another. That is the foundation of our sport right now. And it's amazing, man. It's an amazing feat.
And before the merger, they had the RFA versus LFC. Remember that one?
Yeah, that started in our studio.
There was a genesis of that on MMA Junkie, because let me get this straight. I believe when Ali Abdelaziz was with PFL, he was challenging Bellator or something like that. So there was promotions kind of calling each other out. But these guys, because they, you know, they were rival promotions on the same network, which I can't remember if it was HDNet or Access TV at the time. Probably Access TV. They did it, but they did it with smiles on their faces, shaking hands. There wasn't like, you know, somebody's gonna get it type of thing. The result was the result, and if I got it right, I think it's RFA 4 and LFC 1. I think that's how it finished, but it was a fun night. And Mick Maynard, by the way, folks, who's the UFC matchmaker, one of the two UFC matchmakers, he was the one that ran LFC. And so Ed ran RFA. But it was really, really fun the way it kind of broke down. I think it had to do with Andrew Simon being on our show. Yeah. And then the idea kind of it went and they were able to make something out of it in Mississippi.
It was funny because when he left the studio, I swear to God, maybe 2 days went by before he goes, hey, you know that question you guys asked? I think this might actually happen. Like, it couldn't have been more than 2 days before all that started to unwind. And that was so much fun, like, to see all that happen. As a hardcore MMA fan, you're just giggling. You're like, oh my God, I can't believe this is actually happening. And there's so many egos in the sport that probably wouldn't have allowed something like that to go down. But for them to all get together and agree and do that, it was pretty cool.
The other day I was listening to Rampage talk to Bert, and he implied that he might be writing a book. I think some of these guys need to write books. Anderson, Ed, because they've all experienced the same event, but from different lenses. You know what I mean? So imagine like the heated negotiations as him as a manager in that Zuffa office here in Vegas. Well, that's what it was back then. Now it's the Endeavor office, I guess. Imagine Ed being on the other side and managers coming to him, you know, and them having those discussions as they, you know, broker their deal for LFA. And then everything that had to do with the managers that, that he managed. Imagine the stories, him as, you know, being in the apparel business and just dealing with fighters. That would be an interesting read. So he needs to consider that one too.
Yeah, no, one of my favorite ones of all time is Big John's book. This is great because really it covers the very, very beginning of the sport and just what they had to go through. And it's things that, like, it's so easy for us to just turn the TV on and tune in and watch something, but you forget what actually goes into putting things together. And some of the phone calls, the last minute phone calls that you get, that I imagine just send shivers down your spine, like, you know, this person's missing or that. I mean, they got to have stories for days, man.
I do want to go back to one thing. When he mentioned how he was nervous before Anderson's fight against Rich Franklin. So I never had any experience like that on that level, but I did corner Frank Trigg a couple times. In fact, one of them was RFA in Colorado in Broomfield. But the story I want to reference is in Hawaii when he was fighting Mayhem in 2006. And I think it was for Icon under TJ Thompson. Mm-hmm. And Trigg had been choked out by GSP and Matt Hughes, and he was fighting Mayhem. And I think Mayhem, because of his Brazilian jiu-jitsu expertise, he wanted to beat Trigg with a rear naked. So I was lucky enough to go out there, and I was just going out there as a friend to support, you know. But then he had an extra corner pass, and he said, "Would you like to be my corner?" Because it was just him and Ron Frazier. I said, "Yeah, sure." So I was a spit bucket guy, you know. And that's fine. So I got to see Trigg warm up, and I just got to see a lot of stuff I would never see, like somebody skip rope for 20 minutes before their fight. I would think that would gas me for the week, but he's doing that, you know. But it was just the nerves. I understand exactly what he was saying, because just walking down the ramp was a cool experience, but a nervous experience, you know what I mean? And then being in the corner, and the first time your guy takes a shot, you're just like, oh, you know, because you're feeling for him. But then when he takes a shot and you see the eyes kind of like move back, but then they recover, kind of like in a video game, you know, like the energy. I wanted to tap buttons and see if I could bring it back. And then to see Mayhem take his back, and I'm like, oh, of course the loss is going to suck. But imagine by rear neck, you choke again, you know. Trigg got out of that. Then he came back. And in that promotion, they had Pride Rules. You could heel stomp and soccer kick. And Trigg was taking it to Mayhem. And you know what was cool? Was on the other side was my favorite fighter of all time was Dan Henderson. He was cornering Mayhem. So, you know, just the whole thing was so surreal. It went by so quickly. And then Trigg got the win, you know, and to be able to run in there and you know, lift them up. And it was huge because it was this huge monkey off his back. He defended the rear naked choke. He won a world title. He beat a quality name in Mayhem Miller. He got the win. I mean, it made for everything goes. The next day, USC lost to UCLA 10-6. And you know how I am about USC football. I couldn't give two shits. I was just sitting there watching the game, and they lost. And, of course, I was sad. But that euphoria literally lasted probably about 3 days, probably until I came back of what I had just experienced.
Wow. I remember that night because we're going way back, but there wasn't the coverage that there is today. There weren't those websites. So what I had to do was you were texting me what was going on, and I had
in the middle of the fight?
No, not in the middle of the fight, as you guys were getting ready to go, and then you were supposed to tell me what happened. And there was about 1,000 people on this MySpace thread that I had created. And all they wanted to know was the result of the fight. And so I remember I was like, oh, my God, this fight should be over. I haven't heard. But you were so happy that you didn't get the information to me. And there happened to be somebody that was in the crowd, and they got it to me. And they go, Trigg won. He won by soccer kicks. And I was like, what? Are you kidding me? But I remember there was about 1,000 people in there, and they just wanted to know what happened because those organizations weren't covered the way they are today. And that, yeah, it was MySpace. I remember that, man. Oh, my God. MySpace.
There you go, man. Icon, promotion, MySpace. We're definitely dating ourselves here. But that's literally, I said 2006. That's 15 years. 15 years ago, a lot of this stuff was going down. Mm-hmm. Anyway, man, that was a great booking, Goes. Way to get Ed on the show. And Folks, it's LFA 100, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific tomorrow night. Check it out on the UFC Fight Pass. They definitely have delivered a lot of quality talent to all these big promotions that you see nowadays, like UFC, Bellator, PFL, ONE Championship as well. The other day I was watching Tan Lee fight at ONE Championship. So he's also an LFA alum. You definitely got to check it out. Hey, goes this weekend, Curtis Blaydes against Derek Lewis. Look, Blaydes, when he executes what he executes, he's tough to stop. Mm-hmm. But if Lewis can use that strength, then athleticism, whatever takedown defense he's worked on over the years, because I'm sure this isn't the first time he's dedicated a camp towards a wrestler, he's going to need to he's going to need to use it, because A, don't get taken down, but if you do get up quickly, Blaydes is a beast himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, Curtis Blaydes is shown that really only has one kryptonite, you know, and he's been able to solve just about every other puzzle. Derek Lewis, he can be hot and cold, but the one thing that he does is kind of evolve his game. It comes at a little bit of a slower pace than others, but he does add wrinkles. You know, now he's got kicks that he throws out there that people weren't expecting at first. So I think he's starting, I think he's in a position where he's starting to take his career a little bit more serious. Every time we interview him, you know, we always ask him about the belt. That's not really a big deal. It's just the money that motivates him, and that's okay. But I think it just comes down to who does their thing first. And if Derek Lewis cannot land a big shot or back Curtis Blaydes up early on in that fight, then yeah, it could probably go really bad. And here's the thing, Curtis Blaydes, yeah, he's probably going to go for a takedown. He's going to take you down. But Curtis isn't really that, I'm going to pass your guard and go for a sub or whatever. He is very content to just be on top, ride you out, pound you out. He's okay with that. And that's a scary thing, because he's not going to really give Derek Lewis very many opportunities to get up. And that's just going to sap his energy. So I think, like, probably within the first 2 minutes, we're going to know exactly how that fight's going to go. And I know that's weird saying that about Derek Lewis, because of, you know, he got a KO finish with what, like just a couple seconds left. Do you remember that when we watched that in the studio?
Against Volkov?
Against Volkov. And he was down on those scorecards. But
he's got that power, man, for 25 minutes, no matter what. Even if his hands are low, he's got that power. Not to say Blaydes doesn't, because I've seen Blaydes light people up too. But Blaydes is very clear about his intention. Where he's stronger, he definitely wants to take you. And then if it opens up and he's back on his feet, he's not afraid to strike. But he definitely prefers to grapple. And I don't blame him, honestly. He is a big cat with great wrestling skills, and he knows how to use them. But we'll see. Blaydes is in a very tough spot, because 1 month later, Stipe Miocic is going to defend his belt against the guy that beat Blaydes twice. That's Francis Ngannou. If Ngannou wins, him and Miocic are 1-1. The UFC may go the route of a trilogy, especially if it's a classic. Or they may say, look, Miocic, grab a win, and then we'll do the rubber match. They didn't do it for Cormier, but you never know. You know, sometimes there's injuries involved, contract disputes involved. I don't know if he's a favorite or not. You know, they'll bend over backwards for some champs, and some champs they won't. Like, it seems they really want to work with Kamaru Usman to let him fight a guy who he beat earlier this year and hasn't fought since then. But yet Usman wants that fight. It's a lucrative fight. It's the most lucrative fight for him. And the UFC seems open to doing it. So, but then there were times where Tyron Woodley made demands or wanted to take his career in a certain way, and it didn't seem like they wanted to co-sign with what he had to do. So we'll see how that plays out. If Ngannou loses, he'd be 0-2 against Miocic. It may take a while for Ngannou to get back. Now, that said, I don't think Miocic is going to fight forever either. But that's where Blaydes, you would think, might slip in. Except one John Jones exists. One John Jones, who's moved up to heavyweight, is chomping at the bit to probably fight the winner. So again, unless Ngannou and Miocic is an all-time classic, I don't see how they keep one of the GOATs waiting in the wings and how he doesn't fight the winner, which means Blaydes, does he really want to wait out the result of the fight in the month and then the one that follows after that? and then hope that's not a classic, meaning Jones versus the winner of Miocic and Ngannou? What if that's a classic and they got to run that one back? Sounds like Blaydes may have to take yet one more after Derek Lewis. But that's the position you're in when you go 0-2 against somebody, you know, with Ngannou. So he needs things to shake out a certain way. I would think he would prefer the Miocic win, and then that gets Ngannou out of the way, and then see what happens with Jones. Jones could be lulled back to 205 if Izzy goes out there, puts on a show, and then talks shit to Jones. You never know, man. This thing's clearing up. The Rona's clearing up, and I know Dana White wants to get into that that stadium, and the perfect fight to get into that stadium is John Jones and Israel Adesanya. So we'll see, man. So many things can happen with the results from this weekend. If Derek Lewis wins, well, that begins his case for getting a title shot, because he would have a win over Curtis Blaydes and Alexander Volkov, a guy who just won, a guy who just said, I'd like to fight for the title. That would put him ahead of those guys, but still behind John Jones. So pivotal fight this weekend.
I think no matter what, Curtis Blaydes has to fight two fights before he sees the title shot. And a lot of it comes down to timing. You're right. The best case scenario is a Stipe win, but Stipe is just not that active. He doesn't seem like the type of guy. I mean, he would have to obliterate Ngannou. I just don't see that happening. And then want to turn things around really quick. He doesn't seem like he's that type of guy. And then, you know, to put together a fight like with John Jones, that's not the type of thing that you do in like 4 weeks or something. They probably want to have some kind of build up for something like that. So I would think that takes even more time. So I couldn't see Curtis Blaydes sitting on the shelf that long. And then you have to sweat out how that fight goes down, right? I mean, it could be a classic, could turn into a rematch situation. You never know. So I think Curtis Blaydes is going to sit on the shelf for quite a bit.
I would agree with that. Best thing to do is go out there and get the finish. Get your hand raised and get the finish. That opens things up a lot more. On that same card, we got Yana Kunitskaya versus Ketlin Vera. Derek Minner versus Charles Rosa. Chris Daukaus versus Alexei Olenek. Rafael Alves versus Pat Sabatini. Andrei Arlovsky still ticking against Tom Aspinall. Bill Haas versus Nasruddin Imamov. Danny Chavez versus Jared Gordon. Remember, Jared Gordon was on the show. Goes, he says, man, I don't think anyone can take me. I'm comfortable at this weight class. Watch out for me. He's 16-4 overall. He thinks he's turning a corner. Dracar Close versus Luis Pena. John Castaneda versus Eddie Wineland. Julian Erosa versus Nate Landwehr. Shayna Dobson versus Casey O'Neill. Draco Rodriguez versus Alman Zahabi, Sergey Spivak versus Jared Vandera, and Jamal Emmers versus Chaz Skelly. Is that like 15 fights, I said?
It felt like it. It felt like you went over two cards.
I know. But they can do it. I mean, they have their own arena. They have their own contract. I mean, it's not a pay-per-view where they're time restraints. And I think if they want to get these fights out, then go for it. You know what I mean? Because a lot of times they back themselves to a wall. They got to offer fights to fighters and fulfill, you know, whatever it is that they do. Sometimes they do 8 fights in 40 months, which is 3 years and 4 months. Sometimes they'll do, I think it's 5 fights in 2 years. You know, there's different ones depending on the rate of what you like to fight and what they're comfortable with, depending on the division. Some divisions are more active than others because, like lightweight and welterweight, I think they're over 100 in each one. But flyweight probably has, what, 30 under contract, maybe? I don't know.
If that. You've seen the numbers. Numbers are going down. But right about now is probably where that trickle effect of maybe Super Bowl parties and things like that start to come in. But if the numbers keep going down like this, when would you say we start to see fans?
And you're talking about the full arena, or are you talking about Dana conceding and saying he'll do, you know, like 25% full, 50% full? Which scenario?
I guess both.
I think Dana's going to concede, because even though it was a McGregor-Poirier fight and it was a great fight, I think he liked a little bit of the spirit of having the fans there. And look, the Super Bowl did that, and the World Series did that. I mean, those are memories for a lot of fans, for teams that hadn't been back, you know, in a long time. Or like in the Dodgers case, hadn't won it in a long time. But but still, you know, they were able to get people there. Now, the NBA bubble was closed, so it was just friends and family, I believe. You know, the Lakers, you saw all the family members on the court afterwards, but it was still pretty special. So I think he'll at least want to start filling up the Apex 250. I think 1,200 with the proper seating can fit in the Apex. I think with separation now, 250. But what I think he should do is they have the quicker testing that where they get a result in 15 minutes. Maybe something like that would be nice. That would give a little bit more assurance. And they do a good job of protecting the fighters at the hotel. So I could see maybe something like 250 in a scenario at Apex. But you probably want to know more about T-Mobile Arena.
Even then, like, you know,
I would say they said by July, every American who wants a vaccine will have one. Does that mean the International Fight Week, July? Maybe. We don't need everyone to be vaccinated. We just need, I think, 80% to create like some sort of a version of the herd immunity. So maybe International Fight Week with 20,000, give me 5,000 fans spread out. I think he would do that because he can still pump in a good vibe through the speakers, and they can darken it for, they don't even have to do that. They don't have to pretend that there's no fans there because we know the situation we're in. So those would be my predictions. I would say that by after March 15th is a big date here in Nevada, according to the governor. After then, they might consider some fans at Apex, and then by July, possible 2,500 to 5,000 fans at T-Mobile sounds realistic to me. That's because I think NFL will have fans this year, all of them, and it may not be full stadiums, but I think you'll see half full.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the tour that we went on at the Apex, I could have swore they said they could deck that thing out up to, was it 5,000 fans?
1,200.
1,200?
Yeah.
1,200 fans. And what does the Palms hold?
They're like 1,800.
Nah, really? That's it?
Yeah, but what you saw at the Apex when we saw it, I don't know if that situation holds 1,200, but they can add additional bleachers and maybe go up in certain areas. So that's why they were able to get 1,200. Yeah, the Palms is only like 1,800.
Oh, I thought it was more than that.
Mm-mm.
Well,
it does look like it could be, but them and the Hard Rock wanted to create cozy confines. Now, the one over there at next to, what's it called now? It used to be Monte Carlo. It's called Park MGM, right?
Mm-hmm.
Remember they built an arena or a little music venue? I think that one's about 5,000. That's where they hold the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts to get a little bit bigger. This city has everything you can ask for in terms of different scales of what you need.
The Globe now. Have you seen that?
The Globe? Building. I've never even heard of the Globe. What's the Globe?
Dude, they're building something kind of by where the Prince show used to be. What was it? They used to be the Hilton. Now it's something now else.
The Westgate.
The Westgate, right? I think in that area. There's like, it's kind of like the one in Sweden that's like a globe. They're building something like that there now. You're good now.
Okay.
But they're building that now. So, I mean, like you said, there's just, I mean, Orleans still has an arena. South Point has an arena. I mean, like there's just so many different options in this town. It's pretty insane.
Let me go through a quick rundown of the news because we're running out of time here. I'll throw out a few headlines that I've seen on our page, on our MMA Junkie page, and then whatever you want to talk about. Brian Caraway facing multiple charges in alleged insurance scam with Tate's ATV. So for those that don't know, he used to date former UFC bantamweight champion Misha Tate about 4 or 5 years ago, and that's why her name appears there. That's Gilbert Burns and Santiago Ponzinibbio both talked to our journalists this week, opened up about their losses that they've had, their recent losses there in the welterweight division. Jake Paul says, I want to knock out Askren and then fight Diaz and McGregor in that particular order. Alexander Volkanovski says he's going to put a lot of pressure on Brian Ortega, but he says midway through the fight, he expects to finish him. So that was a nice catch up there. Shout outs to Mike Bond, Farah Hanoun. I know Burns was with Morgan and Ponzinibbio was with Segura, if I'm not mistaken. Hopefully I'm giving the right credit to our writers. Johnny Eduardo returns from a 33-month layoff. He fights Anthony Berchek, who, by the way, is one of my favorites to come into the studio. He's a character, man. I always crack up every time he comes in. Habib goes, he got a gift from PSG star Kylian Mbappe. Not only is he a PSG star, he is a World Cup winner for the country of France in 2018. Mike Perry and Darren Darentil had a very funny conversation on Instagram Live. I don't know if you caught that. That was pretty funny. A gruesome picture that Brian Kelleher shared after his fight at UFC 258. Remember that big cut that he got? So Laura Senko's returning to the broadcast team for UFC Fight Night 185. Anything that you want to go ahead and peel off some thoughts on some of these that I mentioned? Well,
the first thing you brought up was Brian Caraway. And when you go in and you actually read the article and see what he did, I just don't understand. Like, allegedly. I don't know that there's much allegedly to gain from a plot like that. If you're ever going to get me to do something illegal, I'm probably going all in Ocean's 11 style, because it just didn't seem like the juice was worth the squeeze. Like, I really didn't understand that too much. But that was sad to read. And then what was like the second and third thing that you said? I had something on that.
Well, I mentioned that the welterweights like Gilbert Burns and Santiago Ponzinibbio, they opened up a little bit. They did some interviews. Jake Paul, he wants Askren first. Then he wants Nate Diaz, excuse me, and Conor McGregor. I heard him say it. It's like he's got this plan of how he wants to attack them and build slowly up to Conor McGregor. But he thinks that Nate Diaz might be the lure.
He gets it because that's the way he should do it. So if he can get past Ben Askren, which I think a lot of people feel like he probably can, if he fights a smart fight, then Nate Diaz is going to be a bigger paycheck for everyone. And it's still stylistically, I think it's good for him because Nate just doesn't really have speed. Boxing wise, he doesn't really have power, especially when you're putting on bigger gloves. So I think that's another type of fight that he could probably win over a big name in mixed martial arts. That'll set him up for Conor McGregor, and Conor McGregor is just that's a death sentence. I'm sorry. Conor will mop the floor with him, I think, in boxing. I don't think that's good. But the first two that he brought up, I definitely think he can do that, and he can build those matchups to make giant paydays off of him. So I for as much as people hate this kid, and I get it, he can be annoying, he's pretty damn smart.
I think he's going to have a tougher time with Ben Askren than he thinks. I think if you were to put a gun to my head, I probably would take Jake Paul. But I think there's a good chance Askren can beat him, honestly. He's a combat sports athlete, not an NBA, a former NBA player who may have had some hands or may have trained. This guy, it wasn't his forte to strike. He wanted to wrestle. He was a great wrestler. But that doesn't mean he didn't log in a lot of time. Now, it's also been a while since he fought, so who knows? But, you know, he's not just going to go down, I don't believe, with the first punch. Okay, that said, he ain't getting past Nate Diaz to get to Conor McGregor. And if he did, he ain't beating Conor McGregor. Although at that point, somebody would have the right to say, well, you've been wrong about Askren and Diaz. But I just don't think he can beat all three. But I think it all stops with Nate Diaz and or McGregor. Whether McGregor or Diaz goes first after Askren, if he beats Askren, he ain't getting past those guys. That's just my thoughts. But hey, look, I'm the first guy to run in here on Monday's show and go, boy, was I wrong.
Yeah, Yeah, no, I just like the way he laid things out. And if you have a chance, go and watch that interview. Mike Bond did that interview, and he spoke to him for about 30 minutes. And that dude really opened up, really talked about, he didn't really come at it in a disrespectful way, but he laid out his plans, and I thought that made sense. Those are almost exactly the names I would call out, but knowing that I'm probably going to get mopped up at the end. But what does he care? By then, he would have cashed up millions of dollars.
Yeah. What'd you think of Habib getting that jersey from Kylian Mbappe, one of the top strikers in the world?
Oh, dude, I hope it was the one from the other day, right? Where he had the hat trick
against Barcelona, right?
Yeah. That was really cool, man. Habib has been in studio, and there are certain questions that you ask a fighter where you just kind of see their eyes light up a little bit. And that was one of the scenarios where he did talk about some of his favorite soccer teams in the world. And he's put out a couple videos of him playing. It's something that he likes. And it's kind of weird because you don't really get to see high level athletes geek out too much. And you could just tell in the smile that you rarely get to see. He geeked out a little bit. I thought that was pretty cool.
He's a Real Madrid fan, but he says his favorite team in the Premier League is Manchester United. And he says he thinks the Premier League is, he agreed that was the best league.
Mm-hmm.
What I couldn't believe was that he remembered I was a Manchester United fan. That dude's brilliant, man. He's a
Ronaldo remembers.
Chelsea, he's a Chelsea fan, huh?
Yeah, but we gave him a lot of crap one time during the show and then another time outside of the studio. So I remember on a media day one time, when we were walking by, he gave me this kind of like funny look, like, well, these guys, I was wearing a Manchester United jacket. I just gave him that little thing, you know, where you point. I pointed at it, and he kind of went like that as he was talking to someone else.
We got to get back out there to these events, to these media days, and see some of these guys. There's a lot of new talent as well, you know, that we haven't had the chance to meet or have them come into our studio, because we're basically about 2 weeks away from calling it a full year of us being able to do what we normally did at Mandalay Bay, you know, and now we're under a different format. It's not a daily show, but even if we just did our two shows there or here, we still went in for spinning backlick and rankings report. Plus the studio was accessible for us to use at any time. I remember one time just out of nowhere picking up Dan Hooker from the airport and bringing him in. I think one time as well, we went in just to get some time with Colby Covington. He came in with his megaphone and he started putting his some of his support signs that he had for, it was either MAGA or Trump. I can't remember, but
it said special edition. It said make the welterweight division great.
Was that what it was? Okay, yeah, I couldn't remember. Anyway, all right. Well, listen, folks, this Saturday is UFC Fight Night 185 with Curtis Blaydes versus Derek Lewis and a ton of other fights. Check it out. Of course, our website dedicates itself to covering mixed martial arts, all the leagues, including LFA. They have their 100th show on Friday. ONE Championship has a show the following week. Bellator's already announced their events for this schedule. Things really heat up in April for them. PFL, they start back in April as well. ONE Championship on TNT, they start up in April, so it's gonna start happening pretty soon. That's when baseball starts, that's when the NBA playoffs begin as well. April's gonna be tremendous. So good times are ahead, and our website's got you covered. We got a fabulous app. It's free for all tablets and smartphones. And, of course, MMA Junkie Radio here on Sportscaster, Mondays and Thursdays, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, live twice a week. Check it out. Keep an eye for our watch-alongs, our UFC pay-per-view watch-alongs. Those are always a ton of fun. And I got to get with the team and make sure that we're on for the ones in March, because we got some big, big fight cards coming up. We have a triple main event of title fights on March 6th. And then later on in March, there's two fights, two world title fights. Miocic and Volkanovski defend on that one. So pretty big. Mm-hmm. All right, folks, we're going to get on out of here. Thanks as always for your support. Keep the retweets going, the shares. We always appreciate those. And we'll catch you all on Monday. Have a nice weekend. Go out there and be a champion.